stare at a lake of water covering his fields, nor can he eat more than he is able to hold at one time. And when Wang Lung had slept, there was an end to sleeping. The house, as he wandered about it impatiently, was silent, too silent for his vigorous blood. The old man grew very feeble now, half blind and almost wholly deaf, and there was no need of speech with him, except to ask if he were warm and fed, or if he would drink tea, and it made Wang Lung impatient that the old man could not see how rich his son was, and would always mutter if there were tea leaves in his bowl, "A little water is well enough, and tea like silver." But there was no telling the old man anything, for he forgot it at once and lived drawn into his own world, and much of the time he dreamed he was a youth again, and in his own fullness, and he saw little of what passed him now. The old man and the elder girl, who never spoke at all but sat beside her grandfather hour after hour, twisting a bit of cloth, folding and refolding it, and smiling at it. These two had nothing to say to a man prosperous and vigorous. When Wang Lung had poured the old man a bowl of tea and had passed his hand over the girl's cheek and received her sweet empty smile, which passed with such sad swiftness from her face, leaving empty the dim and unshining eyes, there was nothing left. He always turned away from her with a moment's stillness, which was his daughter's mark of sadness on him. And he looked to his two younger children, the boy and the girl, which Olan had borne together, and who now ran about the threshold merrily. But a man cannot be satisfied with the foolishness of little children, and after a brief time of laughter and teasing, they went off to their own games, and Wang Lung was alone and filled with restlessness. Then it was that he looked at Olan, his wife, as a man looks at the woman whose body he knows thoroughly and to satiation, and who has lived beside him so closely that there is nothing he does not know of her, and nothing new which he may expect or hope from her. And it seemed to Wang Lung that he looked at Olan for the first time in his life, and he saw for the first time that she was a woman whom no man could call other than she was, a dull and common creature, who plodded in silence without thought of how she appeared to others. He saw for the first time that her hair was rough and brown and unoiled, and that her face was large and flat and coarse-skinned, and her features too large altogether and without any sort of beauty or light. Her eyebrows were scattered and the hairs too few, and her lips were too wide, and her hands and feet were large and spreading. Looking at her thus with strange eyes, he cried out at her, "Now anyone looking at you would say you were the wife of a common fellow, and never of one who has land which he hires men to plow." It was the first time he had ever spoken of how she seemed to him, and she answered with a slow, painful gaze. She sat upon a bench, threading a long needle in and out of a shoe-sole, and she stopped and held the needle poised, and her mouth gaped open and showed her blackened teeth. Then, as if she understood at last that he had looked at her as a man at a woman, a thick red flush crept up over her high cheekbones, and she muttered, "Since those two last ones were born together, I have not been well. There is a fire in my vitals." And he saw that in her simplicity she thought he accused her, because for more than 7 years she had not conceived. And he answered more roughly than he meant to do, "I mean, cannot you buy a little oil for your hair, as other women do, and make yourself a new coat of black cloth? And those shoes you wear are not fit for a land proprietor's wife, such as you now are." But she answered nothing, only looked at him humbly and without knowing what she did, and she hid her feet one over the other under the bench on which she sat. Then, although in his heart he was ashamed that he reproached this creature who through all these years had followed him faithfully as a dog, and although he remembered that when he was poor and labored in the fields himself, she left her bed even after a child was born and came to help him in the harvest fields, yet he could not stem the irritation in his breast, and he went on ruthlessly, although against his inner will, "I have labored and have grown rich, and I would have my wife look less like a hind. And those feet of yours..." He stopped. It seemed to him that she was altogether hideous, but the most hideous of all were her big feet in their loose cotton cloth shoes. And he looked at them with anger, so that she thrust them yet farther under the bench. And at last she said in a whisper, "My mother did not bind them since I was sold so young. But the girl's feet I will bind, the younger girl's feet I will bind." But he flung himself off because he was ashamed that he was angry at her, and angry because she would not be angry in return, but only was frightened. And he drew his new black robe on him, saying fretfully, "Well, and I will go to the tea shop and see if I can hear anything new. There is nothing in my house except fools and a dotard and two children." His ill temper grew as he walked to the town, because he remembered suddenly that all these new lands of his he could not have bought in a lifetime if Olan had not seized the handful of jewels from the rich man's house, and if she had not given them to him when he commanded her. But when he remembered this, he was the more angry, and he said, as if to answer his own heart rebelliously, "Well, but she did not know what she did. She seized them for pleasure, as a child may seize a handful of red and green sweets, and she would have hidden them forever in her bosom if I had not found it out." Then he wondered if she still hid the pearls between her breasts. But where before it had been strange, and somehow a thing for him to think about sometimes and to picture in his mind, now he thought of it with contempt, for her breasts had grown flabby and pendulous with so many children, and had no beauty, and the pearls between them were foolish and a waste. But all this might have been nothing if Wang Lung were still a poor man, or if the water was not spread over his fields. But he had money. There was silver hidden in the walls of his house, and there was a sack of silver buried under a tile in the floor of his new house, and there was silver wrapped in a cloth in a box in his room where he slept with his wife, and silver sewed into the mat under their bed, and his girdle was full of silver, and he had no lack of it. So that now, instead of it passing from him like life-blood draining from a wound, it lay in his girdle burning his fingers when he felt of it, and eager to be spent on this or that. And he began to be careless of it, and to think what he could do to enjoy the days of his manhood. Everything seemed not so good to him as it was before. The tea shop, which he used to enter timidly, feeling himself but a common country fellow, now seemed dingy and mean to him. In the old days none knew him there, and the tea-boys were impudent to him. But now people nudged each other when he came in, and he could hear a man whisper to another, "There is that man Wang from the Wang village, he who bought the land from the house of Wang. That winter the old lord died when there was the great famine. He is rich now." And Wang Lung, hearing this, sat down with seeming carelessness, but his heart swelled with pride at what he was. But on this day when he had reproached his wife, even the deference he received did not please him, and he sat gloomily drinking his tea and feeling that nothing was as good in his life as he had believed. And then he thought suddenly to himself, "Now why should I drink my tea at this shop whose owner is a cross-eyed weasel and whose earnings are less than the laborers upon my land? I, who have land and whose sons are scholars." And he rose up quickly and threw his money on the table, and went out before any could speak to him. He wandered forth upon the streets of the town without knowing what it was he wished. Once he passed by a storyteller's booth, and for a little while he sat down upon the end of a crowded bench and listened to the old man's tale of old days in the Three Kingdoms, when warriors were brave and cunning. But he was still restless, and he could not come under the man's spell as the others did. And the sound of the little brass gong the man beat wearied him, and he stood up again and went on. Now there was in the town a great tea shop, but newly opened, and by a man from the south who understood such business. And Wang Lung had before this passed the place by, filled with horror at the thought of how money was spent there in gambling and in play and in evil women. But now, driven by his unrest from idleness, and wishing to escape from the reproach of his own heart when he remembered that he had been unjust to his wife, he went toward this place. He was compelled by his restlessness to see or to hear something new. Thus he stepped across the threshold of the new tea shop, into the great glittering room full of tables and open to the street as it was, and he went in bold enough in his bearing and trying to be the more bold, because his heart was timid, and he remembered that only in the last few years was he more than a poor man, who had not at any time more than a silver piece or two ahead, and a man who had even labored at pulling a rickshaw in the streets of a southern city. At first he did not speak at all in the great tea-house, but he bought his tea quietly and drank it and looked about him with wonder. This shop was a great hall, and the ceiling was set about with gilt, and upon the walls there were scrolls hung, made of white silk and painted with the figures of women. Now these women Wang Lung looked at secretly and closely, and it seemed to him they were women in dreams, for none on earth had he seen like them. And the first day he looked at them and drank his tea quickly and went away. But day after day, while the waters held on his land, he went to this tea shop and bought tea and sat alone and drank it and stared at the pictures of the beautiful women. And each day he sat longer, since there was nothing for him to do on his land or in his house. So he might have continued for many days on end, for in spite of his silver hidden in the score of places, he was still a country-looking fellow, and the only one in all that rich tea-shop who wore cotton instead of silk and had a braid of hair down his back, such as no man in a town will wear. But one evening, when he sat drinking and staring from a table near the back of the hall, someone came down from a narrow stair which clung to the furthermost wall and led to the upper floor. Now this tea shop was the only building in all that town which had an upper floor, except the western pagoda, which stood 5 stories high outside the west gate. But the pagoda was narrow, and more narrow toward the top, while the second floor of the tea shop was as square as that part of the building which stood upon the ground. At night the high singing of women's voices and light laughter flowed out of the upper windows, and the sweet strumming of lutes struck delicately by the hands of girls. One could hear the music streaming into the streets, especially after midnight, although where Wang Lung sat the clatter and noise of many men drinking tea and the sharp bony click of dice and sparrow dominoes muffled all else. Thus it was that Wang Lung did not hear behind him on this night the footsteps of a woman creaking upon the narrow stair, and so he started violently when one touched him on the shoulder, not expecting that any would know him here. When he looked up, it was into the narrow, handsome woman's face, the face of Cuckoo, the woman into whose hands he had poured the jewels that day he bought land, and whose hand had held steady the old lord's shaking one, and helped him to set aright his seal upon the deed of sale. She laughed when she saw him, and her laughter was a sort of sharp whispering. "Well, and Wang the farmer," she said, lingering with malice on the word farmer. "And who would think to see you here?" It seemed to Wang Lung, then, that he must prove at any cost to this woman that he was more than a mere country fellow, and he laughed and said too loudly, "Is not my money as good to spend as another man's? And money I do not lack in these days. I have had good fortune." Cuckoo stopped at this, her eyes narrow and bright as a snake's eyes, and her voice smooth as oil flowing from a vessel. "And who has not heard it? And how shall a man better spend the money he has over and above his living than in a place like this, where rich men take their joy, and elegant lords gather to take their joy in feasting and pleasure? There is no such wine as ours. Have you tasted it, Wang Lung?"
"I have only drunk tea as yet," replied Wang Lung, and he was half ashamed. "I have not touched wine or dice."
"Tea!" she exclaimed after him, laughing shrilly. "But we have tiger-bone wine and dawn wine and wine of fragrant rice. Why need you drink tea?"
And as Wang Lung hung his head, she said softly and insidiously, "And I suppose you have not looked at anything else, have you, eh? No pretty little hands? No sweet-smelling cheeks?" Wang Long hung his head yet lower, and the red blood rushed into his face, and he felt as though everyone near looked at him with mockery and listened to the voice of the woman. But when he took heart to glance about from under his lids, he saw no one paying any heed, and the rattling of dice burst out anew, and so he said in confusion, "No, no, I have not. Only tea." Then the woman laughed again and pointed to the painted silken scrolls and said, "There they are, their pictures. Choose which one you wish to see, and put the silver in my hand, and I will place her before you." "Those?" said Wang Long, wondering. "I thought they were pictures of dream women, of goddesses in the mountain of Quen Luen, such as the storytellers speak of." "So they are dream women," rejoined Cuckoo with mocking good humor. "But dreams such as a little silver will turn into flesh." And she went on her way, nodding and winking at the servants standing about, and motioning to Wang Long, as at one of whom she had said, "There is a country bumpkin." But Wang Long sat staring at the pictures with a new interest. Up this narrow stairway, then, in the rooms above him, there were these women in flesh and blood, and men went up to them. Other men than he, of course, but men.
Well, and if he were not the man he was, a good and working man, a man with a wife and sons,
which picture would he, pretending as a child pretends that he might do a certain thing, pretending, then, which would he pretend to take? And he looked at every painted face closely and with intensity, as though each were real. Before this, they had all seemed equally beautiful. Before this, when there had been no question of choosing. But now there were clearly some more beautiful than others. And out of the score and more, he chose three most beautiful. And out of the three, he chose again. And he chose one most beautiful, a small, slender thing, a body light as a bamboo, and a little face as pointed as a kitten's face, and one hand clasping the stem of a lotus flower in bud, and the hand as delicate as the tendril of a fern uncurled. He stared at her, and as he stared, a heat like wine poured through his veins. "She is like a flower on a quince tree," he said suddenly aloud, and hearing his own voice he was alarmed and ashamed, and he rose hastily and put down his money and went out and into the darkness that had now fallen, and so to his home. But over the fields and the water the moonlight hung, a net of silver mist, and in his body his blood ran secret and hot and fast.
19. Now if the waters had at this time receded from Wang Long's land, leaving it wet and smoking under the sun, so that in a few days of summer heat it would need to have been ploughed and harrowed and seed put in, Wang Long might never have gone again to the great tea-shop. Or if a child had fallen ill, or the old man had reached suddenly to the end of his days, Wang Long might have been caught up in the new thing, and so forgotten the pointed face upon the scroll, and the body of the woman slender as a bamboo. But the waters lay placid and unmoved, except for the slight summer wind that rose at sunset. And the old man dozed, and the two boys trudged to school at dawn, and were away until evening. And in his house Wang Long was restless, and he avoided the eyes of Olan, who looked at him miserably as he went here and there, and flung himself down in a chair, and rose from it without drinking the tea she poured, and without smoking the pipe he had lit. At the end of one long day, more long than any other, in the seventh month, when the twilight lingered murmurous and sweet with the breath of the lake, he stood at the door of his house. And suddenly, without a word, he turned abruptly and went into his room and put on his new coat, even the coat of black shining cloth, as shining almost as silk that Olan made for feast days. And with no word to anyone, he went over the narrow paths along the water's edge and through the fields until he came to the darkness of the city gate. And through this he went, and through the streets until he came to the new tea shop. There every light was lit. Bright oil lamps, which are to be bought in the foreign cities of the coast, and men sat under the lights drinking and talking, their robes open to the evening coolness,
and everywhere fans moved to and fro, and good laughter flowed out like music into the street. All the gaiety which Wang Lung had never had from his labor on the land was held here in the walls of this house, where men met to play and never to work. Wang Lung hesitated upon the threshold, and he stood in the bright light which streamed from the open doors. And he might have stood there and gone away, for he was fearful and timid in his heart still, although his blood was rushing through his body fit to burst his veins. But there came out of the shadows, on the edge of the light, a woman who had been leaning idly against the doorway, and it was Cuckoo. She came forward when she saw a man's figure, for it was her business to get customers for the women of the house. But when she saw who it was, she shrugged her shoulders and said, "Ah, it is only the farmer." Wang was stung with the sharp carelessness in her voice, and his sudden anger gave him a courage he had not otherwise, so that he said, "Well, and may I not come into the house, and may I not do as other men?" And she shrugged herself again and laughed and said, "If you have the silver that other men have, you may do as they do." And he wished to show her that he was lordly and rich enough to do as he liked, and he thrust his hand into his girdle and brought it out full of silver, and he said to her, "Is it enough, and is it not enough?" She stared at the handful of silver, and said then without further delay, "Come and say which one you wish." And Wang Lung, without knowing what he said, muttered forth, "Well, I do not know that I want anything." And then his desire overcame him, and he whispered, "That little one, that one with the pointed chin and the little small face, a face like a quince blossom for white and pink, and she holds a lotus bud in her hand." The woman nodded easily, and beckoning him, she threaded her way between the crowded tables, and Wang Lung followed her at a distance. At first it seemed to him that every man looked up and watched him, but when he took courage to see, he saw that none paid him any heed, except for one or two who called out, "Is it late enough then to go to the women?" And another called, "Here is a lusty fellow whose needs must begin early." But by this time they were walking up the narrow straight stairway, and this Wang Lung did with difficulty, for it was the first time he had ever climbed steps in a house. Nevertheless, when they reached the top, it was the same as a house on the earth, except that it seemed a mighty way up when he passed a window and looked into the sky. The woman led the way down a close dark hall then, and she cried as she went, "Now here is the first man of the night." All along the hall doors opened suddenly, and here and there girls' heads showed themselves in patches of light as flowers burst out of their sheaths in the sun. But Cuckoo called cruelly, "No, not you, and not you. No one has asked for any of you. This one is for the little pink-faced dwarf from Suzhou, for Lotus." A ripple of sound ran down the hall, indistinct, derisive, and one girl, ruddy as a pomegranate, called out in a big voice, "And Lotus may have this fellow. He smells of the fields and of garlic." This Wang Lung heard, although he disdained to answer, although her words smote him like a dagger thrust, because he feared that he looked indeed what he was, a farmer. But he went on stoutly when he remembered the good silver in his girdle. And at last the woman struck a closed door harshly with the flat palm of her hand, and went in without waiting. And there upon a bed covered with a flowered red quilt sat a slender girl. If one had told him there were small hands like these, he would not have believed it. Hands so small, and bone so fine, and fingers so pointed with long nails stained the color of lotus buds deep and rosy. And if one had told him that there could be feet like these, little feet thrust into pink satin shoes no bigger than a man's middle finger, and swinging childishly over the bed's edge, if anyone had told him, he would not have believed it. He sat stiffly on the bed beside her, staring at her, and he saw that she was like the picture, and having seen the picture, he would have known her if he had met her. But most of all, her hand was like the painted hand, curling and fine and white as milk. Her two hands lay curling into each other upon the pink and silken lap of her robe, and he would not have dreamed that they were to be touched. He looked at her as he had looked at the picture, and he saw the figure, slender as bamboo in its tight, short upper coat. He saw the small, pointed face set in its painted prettiness above the high collar lined with white fur. He saw the round eyes, the shape of apricots, so that now, at last, he understood what the storytellers meant when they sang of the apricot eyes of the beauties of old. And for him she was not flesh and blood, but the painted picture of a woman. Then she lifted that small curling hand and put it upon his shoulder, and she passed it slowly down the length of his arm, very slowly. And although he had never felt anything so light, so soft as that touch, although if he had not seen it, he would not have known that it passed, he looked and saw the small hand moving down his arm, and it was as though fire followed it and burned under through his sleeve and into the flesh of his arm, and he watched the hand until it reached the end of his sleeve, and then it fell with an instant's practiced hesitation upon his bare wrist, and then into the loose hollow of his hard, dark hand, and he began to tremble, not knowing how to receive it. Then he heard laughter, light, quick, tinkling as the silver bell upon a pagoda shaking in the wind, and a little voice, like laughter, said, "Oh, and how ignorant you are, you great fellow! Shall we sit here the night through while you stare?" And at that he seized her hand between both of his, but carefully, because it was like a fragile dry leaf, hot and dry, and he said to her imploringly, and not knowing what he said, "I do not know anything. Teach me." And she taught him. Now Wang Lung became sick with the sickness, which is greater than any man can have. He had suffered under labor in the sun, and he had suffered under the dry, icy winds of the bitter desert, and he had suffered from starvation when the fields would not bear, and he had suffered from the despair of laboring without hope upon the streets of a southern city. But under none of these did he suffer as he now did under this slight girl's hand. Every day he went to the tea shop, every evening he waited until she would receive him, and every night he went in to her. Each night he went in, and each night again he was the country fellow who knew nothing, trembling at the door, sitting stiffly beside her, waiting for her signal of laughter. And then, fevered, filled with a sickening hunger, he followed slavishly, bit by bit, her unfolding, until the moment of crisis, when, like a flower that is ripe for plucking, she was willing that he should grasp her wholly. Yet never could he grasp her wholly, and this it was which kept him fevered and thirsty, even if she gave him his will of her. When Olan had come to his house, it was health to his flesh, and he lusted for her robustly, as a beast for its mate, and he took her and was satisfied, and he forgot her and did his work content. But there was no such content now in his love for this girl, and there was no health in her for him. At night, when she would have no more of him, pushing him out of the door petulantly with her small hand suddenly strong on his shoulders, his silver thrust into her bosom, he went away hungry as he came. It was as though a man dying of thirst drank the salt water of the sea, which though it is water yet dries his blood into thirst, and yet greater thirst, so that in the end he dies maddened by his very drinking. He went in to her, and he had his will of her again and again, and he came away unsatisfied. All during that hot summer, Wang Lung loved thus this girl. He knew nothing of her, whence she came or what she was. When they were together, he said not a score of words, and he scarcely listened to the constant running of her speech, light and interspersed with laughter like a child's. He only watched her face, her hands, the postures of her body, the meaning of her wide, sweet eyes, waiting for her. He had never enough of her, and he went back to his house in the dawn, dazed and unsatisfied. The days were endless. He would not sleep any more upon his bed, making a pretense of heat in the room, and he spread a mat under the bamboos and slept there fitfully, lying awake to stare into the pointed shadows of the bamboo leaves, his breast filled with a sweet, sick pain he could not understand. And if any spoke to him, his wife or his children, or if Ching came to him and said, "The waters will soon recede, and what is there we should prepare of seed?" he shouted and said, "Why do you trouble me?" And all the time his heart was like to burst because he could not be satisfied of this girl. Thus, as the days went on, and he lived only to pass the day until the evening came, he would not look at the grave faces of Olan and of the children, suddenly sober in their play when he approached, nor even at his old father, who peered at him and asked,
"What is this sickness that turns you full of evil temper and your skin as yellow as clay?"
And as these days went past to the night, the girl Lotus did what she would with him. When she laughed at the braid of his hair, although part of every day he spent in braiding and in brushing it, and said,
"Now the men of the south do not have these monkey tails,"
he went without a word and had it cut off. Although neither by laughter or scorn had anyone been able to persuade him to it before. When Olan saw what he had done, she burst out in terror,
"You have cut off your life!"
But he shouted at her, "And shall I look an old-fashioned fool forever? All the young men of the city have their hair cut short." Yet he was afraid in his heart of what he had done. And yet so he would have cut off his life if the girl Lotus had commanded it or desired it, because she had every beauty which had ever come into his mind to desire in a woman. His good brown body that he washed but rarely, deeming the clean sweat of his labor washing enough for ordinary times, his body he now began to examine as if it were another man's, and he washed himself every day, so that his wife said, troubled,
"You will die with all this washing."
He bought sweet-smelling soap in the shop, a piece of red-scented stuff from foreign parts, and he rubbed it on his flesh, and not for any price would he have eaten a stalk of garlic, although it was a thing he had loved before, lest he stink before her. And none in his house knew what to make of all these things. He bought also new stuffs for clothes, and although Olan had always cut his robes, making them wide and long for good measure, and sewing them stoutly this way and that for strength, now he was scornful of her cutting and sewing, and he took the stuffs to a tailor in the town, and he had his clothes made as the men in the town had theirs, light gray silk for a robe cut neatly to his body and with little to spare, and over this a black satin sleeveless coat. And he bought the first shoes he had had in his life, not made by a woman, and they were black velvet shoes, such as the old lord had worn flapping at his heels. But these fine clothes he was ashamed to wear suddenly before Olan and his children. He kept them folded in sheets of brown oiled paper, and he left them at the tea shop with the clerk he had come to know, and for a price the clerk let him go into an inner room secretly and put them on before he went up the stairs. And beyond this he bought a silver ring washed with gold for his finger. And as hair grew where it had been shaved above his forehead, he smoothed it with the fragrant foreign oil from a small bottle for which he had paid a whole piece of silver. But Olan looked at him in astonishment and did not know what to make from all this, except that one day, after staring at him for a long time as they ate rice at noon, she said heavily, "There is that about you which makes me think of one of the lords in the great house."
Wang Lung laughed loudly then, and he said, "And am I always to look like a hind when we have enough and to spare?"
But in his heart he was greatly pleased, and for that day he was more kindly with her than he had been for many days. Now the money, the good silver, went streaming out of his hands. There was not only the price he must pay for his hours with the girl, but there was the pretty demanding of her desires. She would sigh and murmur, as though her heart were half broken with her desire,
"Ah me, ah me,"
and when he whispered, having learned at last to speak in her presence, "What now, my little heart?" she answered,
"I have no joy today in you, because Black Jade, that one across the hall from me, has a lover who gave her a gold pin for her hair, and I have only this old silver thing which I have had forever and a day."
And then for his life's sake he could not but whisper to her, pushing aside the smooth black curve of her hair that he might have the delight of seeing her small, long-lobed ears,
"And so will I buy a gold pin for the hair of my jewel."
For all these names of love she had taught him, as one teaches new words to a child. She had taught him to say them to her, and he could not say them enough for his own heart, even while he stammered them, he whose speech had all his life been only of planting and of harvests and of sun and rain. Thus the silver came out of the wall and out of the sack, and Olan, who in the old days might have said to him easily enough, "And why do you take the money from the wall?" now said nothing, only watching him in great misery, knowing well that he was living some life apart from her, and apart even from the land, but not knowing what life it was. But she had been afraid of him from that day on which he had seen clearly that she had no beauty of hair or of person, and when he had seen her feet were large, and she was afraid to ask him anything because of his anger that was always ready for her now. There came a day when Wang Long returned to his house over the fields, and he drew near to her as she washed his clothes at the pool. He stood there silent for a while, and then he said to her roughly, and he was rough because he was ashamed and would not acknowledge his shame in his heart, "Where are those pearls you had?" And she answered timidly, looking up from the edge of the pool and from the clothes she was beating upon a smooth flat stone,
"The pearls? I have them."
And he muttered, not looking at her, but at her wrinkled, wet hands, "There is no use in keeping pearls for nothing."
Then she said slowly, "I thought one day I might have them set in earrings." And fearing his laughter, she had said, "I could have them for the younger girl when she is wed."
And he answered her loudly, hardening his heart, "Why should that one wear pearls, with her skin as black as earth? Pearls are for fair women." And then, after an instant's silence, he cried out suddenly, "Give them to me! I have need of them!" Then, slowly, she thrust her wet, wrinkled hand into her bosom, and she drew forth a small package, and she gave it to him, and watched him as he unwrapped it. And the pearls lay in his hand, and they caught softly and fully the light of the sun. And he laughed. But Olan returned to the beating of his clothes, and when tears dropped slowly and heavily from her eyes, she did not put up her hand to wipe them away. Only she beat the more steadily with her wooden stick upon the clothes spread over the stone.
20. And thus it might have gone forever until all the silver was spent, had not that one, Wang Long's uncle, returned suddenly without explanation of where he had been or what he had done. He stood in the door as though he had dropped from a cloud, his ragged clothes unbuttoned and girdled loosely as ever about him, and his face as it always was, but wrinkled and hardened with the sun and the wind. He grinned widely at them all as they sat about the table at their early morning meal, and Wang Long sat agape, for he had forgotten that his uncle lived, and it was like a dead man returning to see him. The old man, his father, blinked and stared and did not recognize the one who had come, until he called out, "Well, and elder brother, and his son, and his sons, and my sister-in-law." Then Wang Long rose, dismayed in his heart, but upon the surface of his face and voice courteous. "Well, and my uncle, and have you eaten?" "No," replied his uncle easily, "but I will eat with you." He sat himself down then, and he drew a bowl and chopsticks to him, and he helped himself freely to rice and dried salt fish, and to salted carrots and to the dried beans that were upon the table. He ate as though he were very hungry, and none spoke until he supped down loudly 3 bowls of the thin rice gruel, cracking quickly between his teeth the bones of the fish and the kernels of the beans. And when he had eaten, he said simply, and as though it was his right, "Now I will sleep, for I am without sleep these 3 nights." Then when Wang Lung, dazed and not knowing what else to do, led him to his father's bed, his uncle lifted the quilts and felt of the good cloth and of the clean new cotton, and he looked at the wooden bedstead and at the good table and at the great wooden chair which Wang Lung had bought for his father's room, and he said, "Well, and I heard you were rich, but I did not know you were as rich as this." And he threw himself upon the bed and drew the quilt about his shoulders, all warm with summer though it was, and everything he used as though it was his own, and he was asleep without further speech.
Wang Lung went back to the middle room in great consternation, for he knew very well that now his uncle would never be driven forth again, now that he knew Wang Lung had wherewith to feed him. And Wang Lung thought of this and thought of his uncle's wife with great fear, because he saw that they would come to his house and none could stop them. As he feared, so it happened. His uncle stretched himself upon the bed at last, after noon had passed, and he yawned loudly three times, and came out of the room, shrugging the clothes together upon his body, and he said to Wang Lung, "Now I will fetch my wife and my son. There are three of us mouths, and in this great house of yours it will never be missed what we eat, and the poor clothes we wear." Wang Lung could do nothing but answer with sullen looks, for it is a shame to a man, when he has enough and to spare, to drive his own father's brother and son from the house. And Wang Lung knew that if he did this, it would be a shame to him in the village, where he was now respected because of his prosperity, and so he did not dare to say anything. But he commanded the laborers to move altogether into the old house, so that the rooms by the gate might be left empty, and into these that very day, in the evening, his uncle came, bringing his wife and his son. And Wang Lung was exceedingly angry, and the more angry because he must bury it all in his heart and answer with smiles and welcome his relatives. This although, when he saw the fat, smooth face of his uncle's wife, he felt fit to burst with his anger. And when he saw the scampish, impudent face of his uncle's son, he could scarcely keep his hand down from slapping it. And for 3 days he did not go into the town because of his anger. Then, when they were all accustomed to what had taken place, and when Olan had said to him, "Cease to be angry, it is a thing to be borne," and Wang Lung saw that his uncle and his uncle's wife and son would be courteous enough for the sake of their food and their shelter, then his thoughts turned more violently than ever to the girl Lotus, and he muttered to himself, "When a man's house is full of wild dogs, he must seek peace elsewhere." And all the old fever and pain burned in him, and he was still never satisfied of his love. Now, what Olan had not seen in her simplicity, nor the old man because of the dimness of his age, nor Ching because of his friendship, the wife of Wang Long's uncle saw at once. And she cried out, the laughter slanting from her eyes, "Now Wang Long is seeking to pluck a flower somewhere." And when Olan looked at her humbly, not understanding, she laughed and said again, "The melon must always be split wide open before you can see the seeds, eh? Well, then, plainly, your man is mad over another woman." This Wang Lung heard his uncle's wife say in the court outside his window, as he lay dozing and weary in his room one early morning, exhausted with his love. He was quickly awake, and he listened further, aghast at the sharpness of this woman's eyes. The thick voice rumbled on, pouring like oil from her fat throat. "Well, and I have seen many a man, and when one smooths his hair and buys new clothes and will have his shoes of velvet all of a sudden, then there is a new woman, and that is sure." There came a broken sound from Olan. What it was she said he could not hear, but his uncle's wife said again, "And it is not to be thought, poor fool, that one woman is enough for any man. And if it is a weary, hard-working woman who has worn away her flesh working for him, it is less than enough for him. His fancy runs elsewhere the more quickly. And you, poor fool, have never been fit for a man's fancy, and little better than an ox for his labor. And it is not for you to repine when he has money and buys himself another to bring her to his house, for all men are so. And would my old do-nothing also, except the poor wretch has never had enough silver in his life to feed himself even." This she said, and more, but no more than this did Wang Lung hear upon his bed, for his thoughts stopped at what she had said. Now, suddenly, did he see how to satisfy his hunger and his thirst after this girl he loved. He would buy her, and bring her to his house, and make her his own, so that no other man could come in to her. And so could he eat, and be fed, and drink, and be satisfied. And he rose up at once from his bed, and he went out, and motioned secretly to the wife of his uncle. And he said, when she had followed him outside the gate, and under the date tree, where none could hear what he had to say, "I listened and heard what you said in the courts, and you are right. I have need of more than that one, and why should I not, seeing that I have land to feed us all?" She answered volubly and eagerly, "And why not, indeed? So have all men who have prospered. It is only the poor man who must needs drink from one cup.
Thus she spoke, knowing what he would say next, and he went on as she had planned. But who will negotiate for me and be the middleman? A man cannot go to a woman and say, "Come to my house." To this she answered instantly, "Now do you leave this affair in my hands? Only tell me which woman it is, and I will manage the affair."
Then Wang Lung answered unwillingly and timidly, for he had never spoken her name aloud before to anyone, "It is the woman called Lotus." It seemed to him that everyone must know and have heard of Lotus, forgetting how only a short 2 summer's moons before he had not known she lived. He was impatient, therefore, when his uncle's wife asked further, "And where her home?" "Now where?" he answered with asperity. "Where except in the great tea shop on the main street of the town?"
"The one called the House of Flowers?"
"And what other?" Wang Long retorted. She mused a while, fingering her pursed lower lip, and she said at last,
"I do not know anyone there. I shall have to find a way. Who is the keeper of this woman?"
And when he told her it was Cuckoo, who had been slave in the great house, she laughed and said, "Oh, that one! Is that what she did after the old lord died in her bed one night? Well, and it is what she would do."
Then she laughed again, a cackling,
and she said easily, "That one! But it is a simple matter indeed. Everything is plain. That one! From the beginning, that one would do anything, even to making a mountain, if she could feel silver enough in her palm for it."
And Wang Long, hearing this, felt his mouth suddenly dry and parched, and his voice came from him in a whisper,
"Silver, then, silver and gold. Anything to the very price of my land."
Then, from a strange and contrary fever of love, Wang Long would not go again to the great tea-house until the affair was arranged. To himself he said, "And if she will not come to my house and be for me only, cut my throat, and I will not go near her again." But when he thought the words, "If she will not come," his heart stood still with fear, so that he continually ran to his uncle's wife, saying, "Now lack of money shall not close the gate." And he said again, "Have you told Cuckoo that I have silver and gold for my will?" And he said, "Tell her she shall do no work of any kind in my house, but she shall wear only silken garments and eat shark's fins, if she will, every day."
Until at last the fat woman grew impatient and cried out at him, rolling her eyes back and forth, "Enough and enough! Am I a fool, or is this the first time I have managed a man and a maid? Leave me alone, and I will do it. I have said everything many times."
Then there was nothing to do except to gnaw his fingers and to see the house suddenly as Lotus might see it, and he hurried Olan into this and that, sweeping and washing and moving tables and chairs, so that she, poor woman, grew more and more terror-stricken, for well she knew by now, although he said nothing, what was to come to her. Now Wang Lung could not bear to sleep any more with Olan, and he said to himself that with 2 women in the house there must be more rooms and another court, and there must be a place where he could go with his love and be separate. So, while he waited for his uncle's wife to complete the matter, he called his laborers and commanded them to build another court to the house behind the middle room, and around the court 3 rooms, 1 large and 2 small on either side. And the laborers stared at him, but dared not reply. And he would not tell them anything, but he superintended them himself, so that he need not talk with Ching even of what he did. And the men dug the earth from the fields and made the walls and beat them down, and Wang Lung sent to the town and bought tiles for the roof. Then, when the rooms were finished and the earth smoothed and beaten down for a floor, he had bricks bought, and the men set them closely together and welded them with lime, and there was a good brick floor to the 3 rooms for Lotus. And Wang Lung bought red cloth to hang at the doors for curtains, and he bought a new table and 2 carved chairs to put on either side, and 2 painted scrolls of pictured hills and water to hang upon the wall behind the table. And he bought a round red lacquered comfit dish with a cover, and in this he put sesame cakes and larded sweets, and he put the box on the table. Then he bought a wide and deep carven bed, big enough for a small room in itself, and he bought flowered curtains to hang about it. But in all this he was ashamed to ask Olan anything. So in the evenings his uncle's wife came in, and she hung the bed curtains and did the things a man is too clumsy for doing. Then all was finished, and there was nothing to do, and a moon of days had passed, and the thing was not yet complete. So Wang Lung dallied alone in the little new court he had built for Lotus, and he thought of a little pool to make in the center of the court, and he called a laborer, and the man dug a pool 3 feet square and set it about with tiles, and Wang Lung went into the city and bought 5 goldfish for it. Then he could think of nothing more to be done, and again he waited, impatient and fevered. During all this time he said nothing to anyone, except to scold the children if they were filthy at their noses, or to roar out at Olan that she had not brushed her hair for 3 days and more, so that at last one morning Olan burst into tears and wept aloud, as he had never seen her weep before, even when they starved or at any other time. He said harshly, therefore, "Now what, woman? Cannot I say, comb out your horse's tail of hair without this trouble over it?" But she answered nothing except to say over and over, moaning, "I have borne you sons, I have borne you sons." And he was silenced and uneasy, and he muttered to himself, for he was ashamed before her, and so he let her alone. It was true that before the law he had no complaint against his wife, for she had borne him 3 good sons, and they were alive, and there was no excuse for him, except his desire. Thus it went, until one day his uncle's wife came and said, "The thing is complete. The woman who is keeper for the master of the tea-house will do it for 100 pieces of silver on her palm at one time, and the girl will come for jade earrings and a ring of jade and a ring of gold and 2 suits of satin clothes and 2 suits of silk clothes and 12 pairs of shoes and 2 silken quilts for her bed." Of all this Wang Lung heard only this part, "The thing is complete," and he cried out, "Let it be done! Let it be done!" And he ran into the inner room, and he got out silver and poured it into her hands, but secretly still, for he was unwilling that anyone should see the good harvests of so many years go thus. And to his uncle's wife he said, "And for yourself, take a good 10 pieces of silver. And she made a feint of refusal, drawing up her fat body and rolling her head this way and that, and crying in a loud whisper, "No, and I will not. We are one family, and you are my son, and I am your mother, and this I do for you, and not for silver." But Wang Lung saw her hand outstretched as she denied, and into it he poured the good silver, and he counted it well spent. Then he bought pork and beef and mandarin fish and bamboo sprouts and chestnuts, and he bought a snarl of dried bird's nests from the south to brew for soup, and he bought dried shark's fins, and every delicacy he knew he bought. And then he waited, if that burning restless impatience within him could be called a waiting. On a shining, glittering, fiery day in the 8th moon, which is the last end of summer, she came to his house. From afar Wang Lung saw her coming. She rode in a closed sedan chair of bamboo borne upon men's shoulders, and he watched the sedan moving this way and that upon the narrow path skirting the fields, and behind it followed the figure of Cuckoo. Then, for an instant, he knew fear, and he said to himself, "What am I taking into my house?" And scarcely knowing what he did, he went quickly into the room where he had slept for these many years with his wife, and he shut the door, and there, in the darkness of the room, he waited in confusion, until he heard his uncle's wife calling loudly for him to come out, for one was at the gate. Then, abashed, and as though he had never seen the girl before, he went slowly out, hanging his head over his fine clothes, and his eyes looking here and there, but never ahead. But Cuckoo hailed him merrily, "Well, and I did not know we would be doing business like this." And then she went to the chair which the men had set down, and she lifted the curtain and clucked her tongue, and she said, "Come out, my lotus flower. Here is your house, and here your lord." And Wang Lung was in an agony because he saw upon the faces of the chairmen wide grins of laughter, and he thought to himself, "Now these are loafers from the town streets, and they are worthless fellows." And he was angry that he felt his face hot and red, and so he would not speak aloud at all. Then the curtain was lifted, and before he knew what he did, he looked, and he saw sitting in the shadowy recess of the chair, painted and cool as a lily, the girl Lotus. He forgot everything, even his anger against the grinning fellows from the town, everything but that he had bought this woman for his own, and she had come to his house forever. and he stood stiff and trembling, watching as she rose graceful as though a wind had passed over a flower. Then, as he watched and could not take his eyes away, she took Cuckoo's hand and stepped out, keeping her head bowed and her eyelids drooped, as she walked tottering and swaying upon her little feet and leaning upon Cuckoo. And as she passed him, she did not speak to him, but she whispered only to Cuckoo, faintly, "Where is my apartment?" Then his uncle's wife came forward to her other side, and between them they led the girl into the court and into the new rooms that Wang Long had built for her. And of all Wang Long's house there was none to see her pass, for he had sent the laborers and Ching away for the day to work on a distant field, and O Lan had gone somewhere he knew not, and had taken the two little ones with her, and the boys were in school, and the old man slept against the wall and heard and saw nothing, and as for the poor fool, she saw no one who came and went, and knew no face except her father's and her mother's. But when Lotus had gone in, Cuckoo drew the curtains after her. Then, after a time, Wang Lung's uncle's wife came out, laughing a little maliciously, and she dusted her hands together as though to free them of something that clung to them. "She reeks of perfume and paint, that one," she said, still laughing. "Like a regular bad one, she smells." And then she said with a deeper malice, "She is not so young as she looks, my nephew. I will dare to say this, that if she had not been on the edge of an age when men will cease soon to look at her, it is doubtful whether jade in her ears and gold on her fingers and even silk and satin would have tempted her to the house of a farmer, and even a well-to-do farmer." And then, seeing the anger on Wang Lung's face at this too plain speaking, she added hastily, "But beautiful she is, and I have never seen another more beautiful, and it will be as sweet as the 8-jeweled rice at a feast, after your years with the thick-boned slave from the house of Huang." But Wang Lung answered nothing, only he moved here and there through the house, and he listened, and he could not be still. At last he dared to lift the red curtain and to go into the court he had built for Lotus, and then into the darkened room where she was. And there he was beside her for the whole day until night. All this time O Lan had not come near the house. At dawn she had taken a hoe from the wall, and she called the children, and she took a little cold food wrapped up in a cabbage leaf, and she had not returned. But when night came on, she entered, silent and earth-stained and dark with weariness, and the children silent behind her. And she said nothing to anyone, but she went into the kitchen and prepared food and set it upon the table, as she always did. And she called the old man and put the chopsticks in his hand, and she fed the poor fool, and then she ate a little with the children. Then, when they slept, and Wang Lung still sat at the table dreaming, she washed herself for sleeping. And at last she went into her accustomed room and slept alone upon her bed. Then did Wang Lung eat and drink of his love night and day. Day after day he went into the room where Lotus lay indolent upon her bed, and he sat beside her and watched her at all she did. She never came forth in the heat of the early autumn days, but she lay while the woman Cuckoo bathed her slender body with lukewarm water and rubbed oil into her flesh and perfume and oil into her hair. For Lotus had said willfully that Cuckoo must stay with her as her servant, and she paid her prodigally, so that the woman was willing enough to serve one instead of a score, and she and Lotus, her mistress, dwelt apart from the others in the new court that Wang Lung had made. All day the girl lay in the cool darkness of her room, nibbling sweetmeats and fruits, and wearing nothing but single garments of green summer silk, a little tight coat cut to her waist, and wide trousers beneath. And thus Wang Lung found her when he came to her, and he ate and drank of his love. Then, at sunset, she sent him away with her pretty petulance, and Cuckoo bathed and perfumed her again, and put on her fresh clothes, soft white silk against her flesh, and peach-colored silk outside, the silken garments that Wang Lung had given, and upon her feet Cuckoo put small embroidered shoes, and then the girl walked into the court and examined the little pool with its 5 gold fish, and Wang Lung stood and stared at the wonder of what he had. She swayed upon her little feet, and to Wang Lung there was nothing so wonderful for beauty in the world as her pointed little feet and her curling, helpless hands. And he ate and drank of his love, and he feasted alone, and he was satisfied. 21.
It was not to be supposed that the coming of this one called Lotus and of her serving woman Cuckoo into Wang Long's house could be accomplished altogether without stir and discord of some sort, since more than one woman under one roof is not for peace. But Wang Long had not foreseen it, and even though he saw by Olan's sullen looks and Cuckoo's sharpness that something was amiss, he would not pay heed to it, and he was careless of anyone so long as he was still fierce with his desire. Nevertheless, when day passed into night and night changed into dawn, Wang Lung saw that it was true the sun rose in the morning, and this woman, Lotus, was there, and the moon rose in its season, and she was there for his hand to grasp when it would. And his thirst of love